Hey guys, it's Brian Young of A Crash Course for the Ravers. It's a crash course for the Ravers. Where we play deep cuts, lost classics, live tracks, your requests, and plenty of local rock sprinkled throughout. I'm joined by my beautiful co-host, Marie Michelle.
That's me.
1 to 4 p.m. Saturdays. Don't miss it on 91.5 WMFO in Medford.
Everybody, this is WMFO in Medford, and that's the intro music. Today, I have a special guest. I have Rachel Rubin with me, and we're going to talk about Merle Haggard. We're going to be playing songs of Merle Haggard. And Rachel, you are not mic'd. I'll get you mic'd in just a minute, because that one's not on. And we will start the program in just about 2 minutes. Get ready. Get ready.
Why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Having trouble finding Connor's middle school? Would you like directions?
No, why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Finding lowest airfare to Istanbul.
No, I'm tired of fighting with him over homework.
Home, walk, restaurant. Need a review?
No, I need help. He's very smart, but his mind wanders. He's disorganized.
I think I understand.
Oh, good.
Finding best potatoes for French fries.
No!
Russet, fingerling, Yukon gold.
Why don't you understand me?
Sorry, I was trying to show how Connor feels every day. Frustrating, isn't it? Redirecting to understood.org.
For the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues, this is what life can feel like. Explore understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues, designed to help your child thrive in school and in life. Understood.org, because understanding is everything.
Brought to you by understood.org and the Ad Council.
Hello, everybody. This is WMFO in Medford, and I'm here to introduce the author of the 33 and a third series of the 33 and a third book series. We have Rachel Rubin. She wrote all about Okie from Muskogee by Merle Haggard. Rachel, I'm glad you're on the program. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to start off with a Merle Haggard song. We're going to talk about Merle Haggard and all the different things about Merle's career. And one song a lot of people know because the Grateful Dead did it. A lot of people did it. A song called Sing Me Back Home. And we're going to start off with that song. Any words you want to say about that particular track?
Well, you know, yes, Sing Me Back Home. I have stuff I definitely want to say about it. It's a song that is, it's a prison song. It's an execution song of which, you know, Haggard did a number. He spent a lot of time incarcerated before he became a country singer. But it's also metaphorically very important because Haggard is was from Northern California, but he was also representing a group of people who were Dust Bowl refugees from Oklahoma, mostly famous in John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath. So Sing Me Back Home is important in two ways. One is that it shows Hag's focus on incarceration, and then the other, it shows metaphorically the role of music.
Okay, and as listeners know, I always start off the show with something acoustic, and I have an acoustic version of Sing Me Back Home. It's mostly acoustic anyway, and some strings on it, but whatever. It's basically acoustic. We're going to start off with that in just a second, and if anyone wants to call in, we have a lot of great stuff to talk about. 855-915-9636. That's the phone number. And get ready. We're going to get everything in the Hag's life right here played on this very radio station. And here we go in 1 second. This is Merle Haggard. Merle Haggard Day, you could say.
And
Rachel Rubin's with me. Welcome to the program. Here we go. WMFO, Medford. And Johnny Cash doing the great Sing Me Back Home song, one of the classics by Merle Haggard. It's time to smash through the acoustic ceiling and play everything freeform and everything beyond the acoustic ceiling. And Rachel, welcome back to the program. I have Rachel Rubin. She's the author of the 33 1/3 book, Okie from Muskogee, the Merle Haggard album, and Rachel reviewed it. And I think we should talk about Oki from Muskogee. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's interesting. And for those people who don't know, the 33 and a third series by Bloomsbury Publishers is a series of small books. Each one is about a single record album. And the reason I picked Oki from Muskogee to write about was because the song Oki from Muskogee was incredibly controversial. It's incredibly controversial. People took it straight when I personally think that there are many, many indicators that Haggard is joking. Vin, do you think we should play it first before I talk about those indicators?
Yeah, we can definitely do that. Okay, we're going to play Oki from Muskogee by Merle Haggard. Check it out. Listen to this. Listen to especially to the lyrics. It was one of the most popular songs of Merle Haggard's first half of his career, would you say?
I think it remained his most popular song
it's probably
for
his entire
career.
And I remember reading that his audiences would go wild for it. They really got into this song when it came out.
They did. They kept.
Okay. Without further ado, here's Oki from Muskogee.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. We don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street. 'Cause we like living right and being free. We don't make a party out of loving, but we like holding hands and pitching woo. We don't let our hair grow long and shaggy like the hippies out in San Francisco do. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse, and white lightning's still the biggest thrill of all. Leather boots are still in style for manly footwear. Beads and Roman sandals won't be seen. And football's still the roughest thing on campus. And the kids here still respect the college dean. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse. White lightning's still the biggest thrill of all. And white lightning still the biggest thrill of all.
In Muskogee, Oklahoma, USA.
That's in Muskogee, Oklahoma, USA. That's where white lightning is the biggest thrill of all. What do you think about that particular thrill,
I
Rachel?
Really have no experience with that particular thrill. But I think that's an incredibly important line. And, you know, one of the things that has always drawn me to this song, besides the very, very sophisticated guitar introduction, is that there are so many indicators in the song that it's a joke. Right, there are so many. I mean, he says, he says, he cracks up a little bit when he says the kids all still respect the college dean. I don't know if any of you noticed that, right? I have to confess, I teach at UMass Boston. I made an appointment with our dean so I could go tell him I was writing this book and make sure that I found a way to say that line, that Hagrid cracks up when he says that line. You know, it has the line, leather boots are still in style for manly footwear. And, like, people don't get that as a joke, you know, or, you know, that he says, the first line is, we don't smoke marijuana, and the last line is, white lightning is the biggest thrill of all. White lightning is moonshine.
And it's illegal.
By definition,
right.
Illegal. Right. So he's clearly opening and closing with all of these signals. Now, you know, obviously, there are many, many songs that people, many, many people take the opposite of what they mean.
Right.
You know, the one that, like, leaps to my mind is Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that happened when this song came out, both by people who loved the song and by people who hated the song. You know, by the way, I also want to say on a sort of more serious note about the Kids All Still Respect the College Dean song, that Hagrid went to 9 days of high school total, mm-hmm. like 9 days of high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are all these indicators that the song is a joke. People took it very straight, however, and that sort of drew me to thinking it was very interesting. It was a great representation of how one of the functions of popular music, besides, you know, dancing to it or whatever, is that it hosts very important social conversations.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a feeling, and I'm not sure if you'll agree with this, but you mentioned Bruce Springsteen singing Born in the USA. He didn't go out of his way to say to everyone, I mean the opposite.
No, he didn't. He
right.
couldn't. And
right.
neither did Hag.
Exactly. That's what
right?
that's what I was going to say.
Except
so I think to a certain extent, both of them ran with that notion that, hey, people are enjoying this particular track. They're enjoying what I'm saying. So you know something? I'm going to pump my fist in the ear, Springsteen anyway, and grow, you know, have all these muscles and be like this really, in quotes, macho Rambo type character. Even though he's not really like that. I mean, he's a very intelligent man and very thoughtful.
But both of them were at a stage in their career
right.
where they had to take, like, all of the mm-hmm. listeners they could get.
Right.
And both of them, I mean, by the end of his life, Hagrid was extremely clear that people took it wrong.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and, you know, for a long time he would say things like, oh, there are, you know, there are 800 ways you could take the song. You know, he would
right.
be try to be blurry about it.
Right. And I know Springsteen would say over and over, like, you know, I got sick of that character on stage of playing all those songs. And he wanted to play, you know, kind of like the Nebraska style or the early, like, street poet style of music. And then he would play, you know, Pete Seeger songs or the Ghost of Tom Joad songs
right.
and really mix it up, not just this fist pumping, you know, Americana patriotism to the ninth degree style of singing and playing or whatever. But he got tired of it. He made it clear, I'm not interested in that character anymore.
Yeah, well, as I said, you know, once you become a bigger star, you're much more able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my favorite, like, denial of it on the part of Merle Haggard was one time I saw him performing in New York in a club. And, you know, it was one of those things, he almost always had to perform Okie. And when he sang the line, we don't make a party out of loving, Bonnie Owens, who was a backup singer and his former wife, yelled out, I do!
That's excellent. Okie from Skokie has a lot of great music on it. It's not just that one song. I'm impressed by a lot of it. Silver Wings is a terrific song. Mama Tries on that record.
Yeah.
What particular track do you want to explore now?
I'd like to go with Mama Tried because that was important to Hagrid's career, and it's also the song he opens the album with.
And it's another classic Merle Haggard song. I know the Grateful Dead did it for years and years and years. They they did a wonderful job with it. Anyone else, do you know, did Mama Tried? Any,
oh, there's so many covers of Mama Tried.
Anyone that you like in particular?
Yeah. Well, I really like the Dead's version, and I'll say why, but play Hags.
His Hags.
Yeah.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama Tried. The one and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my mama seemed to know what lay in store. Spite of all my Sunday learning, towards the bad I kept on turning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. Dear old daddy, rest his soul, left my mom a heavy load. She tried so very hard to fill his shoes, working hours without rest, wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
Okay, that was Mama Tried, Merle Haggard, of course. That was Merle Haggard's first really big song.
And it was important in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. It's the song he opens the album on which he introduces the song Okie from Muskogee. But Mama Tried is also the first song in which Haggard goes autobiographical. And this was an extremely important moment, both for Haggard and for country music generally. Mm-hmm. He was really ashamed. As I said, he spent a lot of time incarcerated, starting when he was quite young, and including spending some time in prison for a felony charge. And he was really, really, really ashamed of that. And he hid it as much as possible. And then a fascinating thing happened. He was in Folsom Prison when Johnny Cash came in and performed there. He was in the audience. And later he was having a conversation with Johnny Cash, and this came out between them. And Johnny Cash convinced Haggard to go autobiographical, to open up about it. So it was interesting to me that you started with a duet between Haggard and Johnny Cash, mm-hmm. because Johnny Cash did have this very shaping influence on Haggard in two ways. One, as I said, he heard him perform in prison and said, I want to do that. And then two, Cash convinced him to go autobiographical, which is when Haggard really got attention. Mama Tried was the first one. Now, obviously, it's not like strictly speaking, sort of like literal, because he says, I'm serving life without parole, and he didn't stay in there. But he did let out at that time that he had been incarcerated.
Yeah, it's funny. I think in some ways, it's the ultimate success story of Johnny Cash playing San Quentin and having Merle Haggard be there to see him and say, hey, I can do that too.
Yeah.
and going on to be a legend. I mean, another legend. And
a legend. I think it's pretty Folsom Prison, because I was referring to Cash's song Folsom Prison Blues, but it was San Quentin.
Right. Just the fact that Merle Haggard was actually behind bars, whereas Johnny Cash was not a convicted felon.
Ever,
exactly. Not that he should, you know, that he should have been.
No.
But it is fascinating that Merle Haggard, who was really, someone who was an outlaw or a prisoner, an actual prisoner, who later on went on to become such a amazing artist. So I think that's fascinating, you know, just the two of them meeting, the two of them, you know, continuing their careers. But Merle Haggard starting from that moment on, because Johnny was already established already, you know, obviously.
And it was very interesting. And also Haggard talked about his time in prison as being very shaping, because there was this thing called, you know, music hour, and he would hear different instruments being played by different prisoners.
And one song, if you don't mind, I'd like to play the song from the album Okie from Muskogee. It's called Silver Wings, and it was never released as a single, was it?
No.
Yeah, and I think it's one of his great songs. It reminds me of a Graham Parsons song called Brass Buttons a little bit, but it also just reminds me of the way Graham and the Byrds took on their style, just their approach. The song is, to me, is very much a pop song.
It is. It's much less country than a lot of his songs.
All right, I'm just going to cue it up, and Rachel's going to tell you a little bit more about Silver Wings.
Okay, well, Silver Wings, as I said, it is, you know, in terms of content, it's very country, because it is about like a couple breaking up, separating. In terms of, you know, Haggard's career, it's about, well, the Silver Wings refer to an airplane. So he has so many songs about traveling and being on the road. Most of them are about, you know, either trucking or hitchhiking, stuff like that. But it does have a sound to it. Again, it's sophisticated. It's not like, you know, rough country music the way... It's not as recognizably country as most of Haggard's songs. And it's interesting because Haggard himself had a very, very wide range of musical taste. And he always said that his favorite kind of music was jazz. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, he would like name the most important artists to him. He would like list jazz musicians. You know, at some point somebody asked him how he wanted to be remembered, and he said country jazz. And I hope we'll have some time to play some of his songs that actually have horns and jazz in them, because he has a lot of songs like that. But Silver Wings is not... You know, it's not as hard, mm-hmm, as some of his songs.
Right, and to me, it just has a very much of pop sensibility about, mm-hmm, it. And we're going to come back in just 1 second, and we will be playing Silver Wings. So just sit tight.
180 over 111, and I had a stroke. When I woke up, I couldn't speak or walk.
145 over 92, and then I had a heart attack.
182 over 100, and I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest, and then a stroke. Everything changed. It felt like my life was over.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a heart attack or stroke are far from invisible or silent.
150 over 90, and I had a stroke. If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
180 over 110, and I had a stroke.
And I'm 33, so I never see this coming.
If you've come off your treatment plan, get back on it. Or talk with your doctor to create an exercise, diet, and medication plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed. Head to toe.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Okay, without further ado, here is Silver Wings.
Silver wings shining.
wearing flag. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Don't leave me, I cry. Don't take that airplane ride. But you locked me out of your mind and left me standing here behind. Silver wings shining in the sunlight. Roaring engine headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Slowly fading out of sight.
Silver Wings right there, Merle Haggard, and one of his great ones from a collection of his called Down Every Road, and a song called Silver Wings.
But it's also it's on the Okie album, and I want to say I think that's extremely significant, because Haggard was sort of making a point about, like, hey, you guys, like, this music is sophisticated, you know, and so are we.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful stuff. And one thing that people might not know about Merle Haggard, back when he was just sort of becoming a substantial or a recognized star, he made a song called Irma Jackson, and the record company refused to put it out. And could you explain that,
yes,
Rachel, why?
He wanted the song Irma Jackson to be the flip side of Okie from Muskogee. And the record company refused to put it out because it's a song about an interracial romance. Now, this was quite early for something like that. And the song didn't come out for a long time. They were just sort of pushing him into this box and sort of not wanting to be controversial. But anyway, let's play Irma Jackson and then perhaps talk about it.
You got it. And this is Merle Haggard. And is it on this one here? What track is it?
25.
Oh, good. There we go. This can also be found on Down Every Road. It's Merle Haggard, and it is Irma Jackson.
I'd love to shout my feelings from a mountain high. Tell the world I love her, and I will till I die. There's no way the world will understand that love is colorblind. That's why Irma Jackson can't be mine. I remember when no one cared about us being friends. We were only children, and it really didn't matter then. But we grew up too quickly in a world that draws a line where they say Irma Jackson can't be mine. If my loving Irma Jackson is a sin, then I don't understand this crazy world we're living in. There's a mighty wall between us standing high. But I'll love Burma Jackson till I die. She tells me she's decided that she'll go away. I guess it's right that she alone should have the final say. But in spite of her decision forcing us to say goodbye, I'll still love Irma Jackson till I die. If my loving Irma Jackson is a sin, then I don't understand this crazy world we're living in. It's a mighty wall between us standing high. But I'll love Irma Jackson till I die.
Merle Haggard, he's gonna love Irma Jackson till he dies. He was married 5 times, was it?
Well,
I'm kidding you. Now, let's talk about Irma Jackson. Irma Jackson. Some very, very wonderful lyrics in that song about the different walls people put themselves in, or, you know, they can't get over.
And absolutely.
Let's chat about that.
And it was, and as I said, it was extremely, you know, he wanted it to be the flip side of Okie,
mm-hmm.
Which I think would have definitely framed Okie in an extremely progressive way. But the record company refused, and it didn't come out until much, much later, and even then on some kind of compilation.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, you know, all the way up to the end of his life, if people said, Hag, what's the most important song to you that you ever wrote and recorded? He would say Irma Jackson.
Irma Jackson, yeah. It's fascinating how that song was an undiscovered gem, or a diamond in the rough, a diamond never showed to the world, basically, for a long time. I mean, that's a great song. Did you want to play this version, or did you want to talk about people's take of Okie from Muskogee, the record? And you said you wanted to perhaps go into this version. Not this version. What was influenced by it? Did you want to talk about... Yes, we are right now.
Sorry, I didn't know.
I'm sorry. Barrons okay. Whitfield did a version of Irma Jackson.
Yeah, Barrons so. Whitfield did a version of Irma Jackson. But what I think is more, and that makes sense, right? Like if you know, are a sort of non-country African-American singer, mm-hmm. you would come to that. But what I think is really interesting is that there was an important African-American country singer who first covered Okie from Muskogee. His name is Obie McClinton.
Okay.
First covered Okie from Muskogee, and then he.
Would you like me to look for it, or?
Do you want to play it?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hear it.
So.
So he first covered Okie from Muskogee. Maybe we could just play these two right in a row. He first covered Okie from Muskogee, but then he did a version, or not a version, because it has a different tune. But he did his own called Obie from Senatobie.
Is it on Jeff Walker or someone else who did it?
Obie McClinton.
Obie Clinton?
Obie McClinton.
Obie McClinton, okay.
O period, yeah. Obie, just Obie from Senatobie.
Okay, let me see. All right, I'm looking for it. Got the Beach Boys doing Okie from Muskogee.
Okay, well, I would love to play that at some point. The Beach Boys with the Grateful Dead, okay. I should say.
I'm going to continue looking, but how about if we play this version of it real quick?
Sure.
There we go. Okie from Muskogee. By guess who?
The Beach Boys.
The Boys of Summer, the Beach Boys.
This song was written by a guy named Merle Haggard. And better request for a demonstration. What is it? I don't know. If anybody knows the words to this chorus, to this song, we invite you to sing along. In fact, that goes for just about anything we do. If you know the words, sing along. Or else you tap. We don't smoke marijuana.
1971, the Beach Boys doing Okie from Muskogee.
And one of the things that I think is interesting, I know that like listeners can't see the video, but A, it's very clear that the people in the audience, this is a concert in Central Park, mm-hmm. by the way, and the people in the audience, many of them know the lyrics and are just totally digging it. And B, well, we said it's 1971, so this is after the Beach Boys have gone really hippie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, when they say... So they gesture at their hair and the beads they're wearing and so forth.
And a lot of other artists were influenced by Okie from Muskogee, including this one, Obie McClinton.
He's one of the most important African-American country singers, at least, you know, from Haggard's era. So first he did an album with a cover of Okie from Muskogee. And then he did something based on it called Obie from Senatobie. Do you want to just play them both?
Yes. Let's play his take on Okie from Muskogee. Sound good?
Yes.
Let's go. Here's Obie McClinton.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. And we don't take no trips on LSD. And we don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street, you see. We like living right and being free. And we don't make a party out of loving. We like holding hands and pitching hoops. And we don't let our hair get long and shaggy like the hippies out there in San Francisco do. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. And we still wave old glory round at the courthouse. And white lightning still the biggest thrill of all. Leather boots are still in style in manly footwear. Beads and Roman sandals, they won't be seen. Football's still the roughest thing on campus. And the kids here still respect the college dean. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. And we still wave old glory round at the courthouse. And white lightning still the biggest thrill of all. And we still wave old glory round at the courthouse in Muskogee, Oklahoma, USA.
Muskogee, Oklahoma, USA. That was Obie McClinton's take on it. Rachel, what'd you think about that one?
Well, I mean, I'm completely fascinated by this take on it for a couple of reasons. One is that, and I think this is extremely significant, Obie McClinton sounds considerably more Southern than Merle Haggard. The reason is Merle Haggard is not Southern, right? He was from Northern California. He was from Bakersfield. The whole Bakersfield country scene became really, really important in starting, I guess, in sort of the post-World War II era, when Nashville country music went sort of like polite and, you know, I don't know, like pretty and so forth, and the Bakersfield scene was hard. But people who mocked Merle Haggard, and we'll get to this, I think, Vin, but people who mocked Merle Haggard mostly, like, set these satires of him in the South. They were sort of insulting him by using Southern stereotypes, which just didn't apply to him at all. So that's the first interesting thing about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you should mention that. I wanted to talk to you about how some of the people who kind of got the South, or they, you would think they're from the South, like Creedence Clearwater Revival, sing about the bayou and all about, you know, just a real twang in that voice of John Fogerty. But he was from San Francisco.
No, he was from San Francisco, actually. Right. And you said bayou, which brings me to the other thing that I wanted to say about Obie McClinton's version of Okie, which is, I thought that was very Cajun sounding now. That just really hit me.
It was very
Cajun sounding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, Dwight Yoakam used to go around saying a lot that Creedence would never have existed if it hadn't been for Merle Haggard.
Right. No,
so that's very interesting.
I don't disagree with that. I just find it like, you know, he was right there in Bakersfield, and that whole Bakersfield sound that, you know, it was harder. It was not polished, and it wasn't like sappy with the strings. And
right.
Jack Clement was, he said something like, that's just the way I do it, and that's my thing. And
right.
And so he put strings and, you know, back up everything on everything. He was like the Phil Spector of the country world.
Yes.
And a lot of it had that.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
And,
some of it was very tastefully done and went quite wonderful. I mean, I love what the birds did.
Okay, yes, but
there.
I mean, it's very interesting. And by the way, you know, again, this is a radio show, but you can sort of see those differences on record covers as well. And many Hag covers, like he's wearing jeans, and some of them he's like wearing a hard hat to identify himself as working class, which he did in many ways, which we'll talk about. And then a lot of the Nashville sound records from the same time, you know, people were wearing like literally tuxedos and jewelry,
sure.
You know, so.
Right, no, definitely. I mean, the whole nudie suits and all that, was that Californian, or was that more Southern, or was it just sort of them playing around with the Southern idea? Because nudie was, like, if you see those, like, the gaudy suits.
Yeah.
Was that, like, a Southern thing they were fooling around with, or was it more
that
rodeo?
Was a Southern thing, but I'm just sort of more referring to sort of people, like, wearing, like, you know, literally, there are people who wore tuxedos on country album covers at the same time as, you know, Hag sitting there with a construction hat on his. So there you go.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Obie McClinton did that cover of Okie from Muskogee. And then he did his own version of it called Obie from Senatobie.
And let's play that one. It goes like this.
When I got drafted into the military service, I noticed them boys from Mississippi sure was nervous. When it was time to march and everybody fall in line, you could hear the old sergeant holler, roll call time. He said, when I call your name, son, you give me your hometown. That's when all of them stories would float around. One from Mississippi, you could bet, or he'd holler Memphis. Now everybody knew that was in Tennessee. But old Sarge really got quite a shock when that roll call got around to me. This is what I said. You can just call me Obie from Senatobie, and you better believe that's a Mississippi town. Oh, we still eat watermelons at the Tay County Gin House, and we drink homebrew when the sun go down. Now all the fellas turn to me, they started to stare, but I just kept right on talking with my head in the air. Then somebody said, boy, you're gonna have to hide your face. Now don't you know you should have told him some important place. And I looked at him and I said, buddy, you can call me Obie from Senatobie.
you can tell anybody that you might see. My mama gave birth to me in Senatobia, and it's the most important place in the world to me. Everybody, you can just call me Hobie from Senatobia, and you better believe it's a Mississippi town. We still eat rag bologna down on Main Street, and we drink home brew when the sun go down. I said, y'all can just call me Hobie from Senatobia.
That's Hobie from Senatobia. Obie McClinton. Was that a big hit, Rachel?
It was a really big hit for him. It was shaping. And I think there are a couple of incredibly fascinating things about it. First of all, the song is from 1973. He makes a reference to being drafted. So it's during the Vietnam War. I think it's like he's making it very plain who was drafted, who got, who had to serve. People who were working class. I mean, there was this huge, like, class difference. And African Americans who now it's, you know, sort of openly acknowledged were put into the most dangerous spots. So he's talking about, you know, so he starts out by saying, hey guys, like, we are not the most, we're the least powerful people in the country. But then he also really takes on the notion of stereotypes. So first of all, he's like, people are saying, don't admit you're from the South. And he's like, no, I'm proud to be from the South, mm-hmm. right? And I want us to play some more response songs to Okie from Muskogee, because most of them are set in the South, even though, as we've said, Hag was from California. But in the case of Obie McClinton, he talks about Southern stereotypes, but he also talks about Black stereotypes. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, We eat a lot of watermelon.
Yes,
like, right? Like,
he does.
You know, I'm not going to hide it.
That's right.
You know, and it's very, very interesting that he did that, because the very, very important, African-American, like, modernist poet, Amiri Baraka, mm-hmm. also talked about, nobody knows if this story is true or not, but he says it was, that when he was a student at Howard University, he was sitting on a public bench eating watermelon, and the people from Howard University, an African-American university,
right.
came up to him and said, don't eat that in public.
Oh, know? Wow.
And he's like, you know, so Obie McClinton is in a way making the same case, mm-hmm. right? He's like, stop with the stereotyping, like, we're not ashamed to be who we are.
Well, right.
I'm not going to pretend.
No one should be ashamed of eating anything.
Right.
If you
but
think
I'm
about
not going
right.
to be ashamed of being.
As long as you're not a cannibal. Right.
Yeah, so.
We're gonna play one more song. I'll do a rundown of all the tracks you heard, and then we'll have Rachel Rubin for the next hour from 5 to 6, and I would love to hear from you. It's 855-915-9636. And we're going to do one more song, and then we'll go into the 5 o'clock hour. This is Chelsea Carroll. It's a song called Hippie from Mississippi.
Right.
And
so this is Chelsea Carroll, song called Hippie from
another
Mississippi.
Another kind of a response.
It's a response song.
All this started because of our old friend Merle Haggard's Okie from Muskogee.
Yeah. And again, the response song, who's the from the point of view of the hippie, because he sees Haggard's song as being anti-hippie. But it also sets it in the South. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, there's nothing to do with the South about Haggard.
Okay. Enjoy Chelsea Carroll's Hippie from Mississippi.
Some folks say my looks need some improvement. Some say I ought to run and hide my head. I'm the leader of a student's freedom movement, and I'm lucky to be alive instead of dead. But I'm proud to be a hippie from Mississippi, even though my folks have had to change the name. And my sister claims that she don't even know me,
I can't understand why they all feel so ashamed. Well, my hair is 3 feet long and it's a kind of wavy. In another year it'll probably reach the ground. My father's mad 'cause I won't join the Navy. And Robert Shelton follows me around. Yes, I'm proud to be a hippie from Mississippi. But when I talk about how all men should be free, the old men who gathered down at the courthouse, you swear words, spit tobacco juice on me. Well, I don't make a party out of loving, and the reason's very simple, you can see. I don't get any kind of loving, 'cause no girl in this town will go with me. But I'm proud to be a hippie from Mississippi, even though it's kinda rough in this old town. And to make sure I don't get tarred and feathered, tomorrow I'll be San Francisco bound.
Wow, a lot of phase guitar on that one, huh, Rachel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was, I kind
of
liked it,
and a lot of direct
though.
References to the original Okie from Muskogee.
This is all things Merle Haggard right here. Rachel Rubin's my guest. She wrote the 33 and a third book on Okie from Muskogee. And we'd love to hear from you from 5 o'clock till 6 o'clock, so call in real soon, 855-915-9636. And just so you have it, I want to play, not a play, I want to do a rundown. I want to just say the songs that you heard on Acoustic Sailing.